Welcome to the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge's radio show, AC23. The mission of the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge is to foster the creative capacity in the Capital Region through advocacy, resources, teaching, and training. Over the next 23 minutes, you'll hear from staff members, artists, and arts organizations throughout our region. If you'd like to hear this episode again, you can find it online at www.artsbr.org.
Yeah, Dizzy was screaming next to Opie, who's beaming. Mump was stomping, suddenly in walked Bud, and then we start into something. Oscar played a mean song, Mr. Byers blew a mean horn. Monk was thumping, suddenly in walked Bud, and then we got into something. Every hipster had really dug Bud when he hit town. Playing those notes nobody wrote, putting it down. Dizzy was screaming next to Opie, who was beaming. Monk was stomping, suddenly in walked Bud, and then we got into something.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Hello, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge and our AC23 Plus series, and this is our Artist Legacy series, where I have the extreme pleasure and luxury of interviewing amazing artists, musicians, particularly musicians in the South Louisiana area that have a lot to, a lot of history to offer, lot of artistry for us to enjoy. Uh-huh. And today my guest is one of my longtime dear friends. He might not consider himself this to me, but a longtime mentor for me, Mr. Ed Perkins.
Hello.
But as like as we all say, Perk.
Percolator.
For now, for the rest of this interview, you will be known as Perk.
Percolator.
As we have, Percolator, even better.
Percolator.
I had the pleasure of meeting Perk, I think, when I was right out of high school, trying to learn how to play this music, and just started gigging around town. But we did a gig at Belle of Baton Rouge. Is that where
Belle of Baton Rouge, yeah. The Belle of Baton Rouge. Well, we did the Rouge first.
Oh, that's right. We did the Rouge. For how long?
And we did the Rouge for, they had just opened, I think, in 1990.
Yeah.
And we had the gig over there. We gigged over there for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Every Sunday.
Me, you, Robert Nash.
Donald Evans. Duck Evans.
And Duck Evans, yeah. Donald.
Yeah.
And 5 years we played there every Sunday. That's right. We did that for... Good work. We went through the songbook over there.
Exactly.
We learned a lot of tunes that we all didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
We'd pull the books out and start reading it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And as a result of that, that repertoire we developed over there was huge.
Well, and a lot of that repertoire you actually brought in from just your years of
singing,
growing up, and doing it.
Yeah. With different folks all over. South Louisiana, Baton Rouge.
Well, Perk, tell everybody where are you from?
I'm from New Orleans. Grew up in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up in the St. Bernard housing.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody don't call it, they don't call it projects. They say development.
There you go.
The St. Bernard housing development.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I went to elementary school in that area. And that's where I first got introduced to music. In the
so
second
that was on
grade.
The elementary level or middle school?
Elementary.
Okay.
Second grade.
Mm-hmm.
I started to play the trumpet.
Okay.
And something very, I always mention this. I got my first trumpet because, of course, I come out of a family of 9 kids.
Mm-hmm.
There was no money to buy a trumpet. But I got my first trumpet to play in the second grade from Professor Peter Davis.
Okay.
And Professor Peter Davis was... Louis Armstrong's. That's where he learned to play music.
Oh,
at the wife's
okay.
Home.
Yeah.
That's who I got my first
no kidding.
Little tutelage, a little teaching from Professor Peter Davis. And he also gave me a trumpet to
to play with because I didn't have one.
Right.
And, of course, Fess, they used to call him Fess. Fess died, I think, shortly thereafter.
I'm just curious, would he ever mention Louis? Like,
The people I knew some people in the neighborhood that knew him real well. This is how I got introduced to him as a kid. Mm-hmm. And they took an interest in me. He said, you want to play the trumpet? So he said, look, I'm going to get vested to get you a trumpet, which I don't have now because the trumpet went back to him, to his family.
Sure.
Yeah. And anyway, I played the trumpet from second grade through the seventh grade. Mm-hmm. Then I started playing football and running tracks, found out I could run and play football.
Became an athlete.
Put the trumpet down. some good toolage, though, I got in elementary school. Mm-hmm. The schools used to do operettas back then. Mm-hmm. They put on these big productions like Nutcracker Suite.
Right.
You know, and I remember some of that stuff today. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Anyway, I had parts, singing parts. And that's where I started to sing. Got was in the choir.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had to harmonize with other...
Well, I learned to harmonize in middle school. I'm talking about 6 to 9, six, seven, eight, nine.
Right.
We did barbershop quartet. Yeah. We do stuff like Sweet Alibi, da-da, and go to city competition, state competition, which was great.
Yeah.
That's where I got a lot of singing in.
Huh.
So by the time I got to high school, even though I was an athlete playing football and running track, I was still singing.
Right.
In the choir after football season. We sang in the choir. And we did state competition, you know, city, all city choir. I did that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I didn't really get into the jazz part of actually singing with a group till after I got out of high school. I finished high school in 66.
Okay.
So I started singing in 66 with bands.
Now, I'm curious
mm-hmm.
just what the environment looked like in New Orleans. Of course, we know New Orleans is probably the most fertile music city in the country.
Mm-hmm.
What did it look like back then, and what kind of influences did you have for jazz or, you know, blues?
You know, jazz, the trap thing was always there. Yeah. The Dixieland, you know, you had people like Pete Fountain and Al Hurt and all of them. You heard them all the time.
Right.
Matter of fact, they had clubs on Bourbon Street.
Mm-hmm.
So you heard a lot of that. And you heard a lot of the traditional brass bands because there was always somebody, a funeral, a jazz funeral, this or that, which caught your ear.
Right.
But I got into, I guess what we're going to call it, modern jazz, the modern jazz part.
Right. Contemporary for that time.
Yeah, contemporary jazz for that time. You had guys like Wallace Davenport, which was a great trumpet player out of New Orleans.
Yeah.
You had the Lasties, David Lasty, saxophone player. Freddie Kemp.
Yeah.
You had guys like Edward Frank playing piano. So
right.
these guys had combos.
Mm-hmm.
And in New Orleans at that time, you had bands all over the city. I could go uptown, hang out all night long, and there was bands you can go sit in with.
What were some of the clubs?
You had uptown on Errata Street, you had Sylvia's, which was where James Rivers did a lot of playing.
Mm-hmm.
You'd hear about him with the bagpipes going down the street and up Perrette Street and holding up the bus and all the traffic, people following him. He playing the bagpipe. But anyway, Pogie Jones. I started singing after high school, after I graduated from high school with Pogie Jones.
Yeah.
And I met Pogie at a club called the Brother Street back then. Pogie was playing there along with Herb Taylor on drums, Jerry Green on bass. Edward Frank was the piano player, one-hand piano player.
Right.
I started singing with them. How I started singing with them, I asked them to sit in.
Mm-hmm.
So the guys, they heard me, and they said, oh, man, you can sing.
Right.
That was the start of my singing career.
So just sitting in.
Just sitting in.
Yeah.
And with Edward Frank, with Pogie.
Mm-hmm.
So Pogie said, man, I want you to you be part of the band.
Right.
So Pogie would, wherever he played at from there on, I played with him. Sylvia's out in Shrewsbury at clubs out there. I'm trying to think of all the name of the clubs. We play all over town. Club 77,
mm-hmm.
We play at Terrell's.
Right.
These were clubs back then where you had live music. And what else we played? Oh, man, all over the place. I'm trying to think of all the doggone clubs. Showcase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a saying that I've heard that gigging is really the best teacher because you get the test first and then the lesson afterwards.
But
that's basically what you were experiencing. You were being tested every time you did it.
And absolutely.
Every night was the
lesson. You develop a stage presence.
Right.
Because the audience was right there, and they like looking at you.
And you learn what works, what doesn't work as well.
What doesn't work.
How to read an audience, which I think you're wonderful at.
Look, how to read an audience. I tell all the young singers, that's key. You can't sing to yourself.
Right. Right.
You know, that's fine. You can sing to yourself at home. Mm-hmm. You know, we sing to the people.
Exactly.
And you want them to like what you're doing.
Right.
You know, it ain't so much about, oh, you got a good voice or this or that. Mm-hmm. And you need to learn your material to the point where you can blend, which I know we're going a little bit early, but this came from Alvin Batiste.
Yeah.
Listen throughout the band.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, that's one thing I think I learned working with you, because you were really the first high-level singer that I was able to work with. But it taught me, you're talking about the connection with the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And as an instrumentalist, really up to that point, you know, very consumed with me learning how to play the piano. But when I started working with you and see how that relates to the audience, because I always felt like for the layperson, they can relate to a singer immediately because there's the lyric content, there's the presence, the charisma, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And to be along the ride with that as a pianist, it taught me, wait a minute, you know, it's really not just about me, you know, being an artist or whatever. It's connecting with the audience. That's a huge part of what this is all about.
Right. And the inner connection with all the players within the band.
Right.
That was one of Bat's big things. Mm-hmm. You're an instrument in the band.
Exactly.
You're just a vocal instrument.
Right.
So, you know, you're making a connection with everybody in the band.
Right.
Which is great.
Yeah.
I love it, you know, to turn around, look. Cats, you know, that's part of the deal, man.
Well,
and everybody has to like what you're doing. I have to like what they're doing. And like you said, we worked so wonderful together for so many years, which was great, man. That's a big part of it, because we've been with some people that wasn't that great.
Oh, well, sure. Yeah, we all have those stories. But you know, to that point, you know, another thing I noticed, especially if I wasn't playing, if I was in the audience and watching people that I admired, an audience loves to watch a band having a good time.
Right.
You know, and just to see the cats genuinely having a good time on stage, laughing, comfortable with one another,
right.
That makes the audience engaged.
Right.
And interested.
Right.
You know, it's a big deal.
Right, right. But you have to have that. That's a big part. Again, not just singing. You know, you want to have a good grasp of your content. You know,
sure.
Yeah, you want to have a good grasp of it,
yeah,
and know what the hell you're doing. Learn the tunes throughout the bridges, the break. You know.
Well, yeah, really know your craft.
Really know your craft.
Yeah, especially in jazz, because it seems like the whole idea is to almost kind of learn the rules and break the rules. You have to know it so well that you can stretch
that you can,
and do your thing.
Right, space.
Yeah, and working with you, I'll let the audience in on this one. You never know what you're going to get with Perk, because you'll be playing a tune and all of a sudden we're into another tune. I'm like, when did that happen?
Well, pretty much like an instrumentalist.
Yeah.
And that's jazz.
Yeah.
Bat used to say that, man, that's jazz, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, a horn player playing a solo, or a piano player playing a solo, and all of a sudden you hear something else going, because what, there's only so many chords, right?
Only 12 notes.
That's right.
Well, look.
Love it.
Before we get into Mr. Bat, and we'll explain that a little bit more, I want to do a New Orleans tune. What do you think about, do you know what it means to miss New Orleans?
Great, let's do that. All right. Because I miss it. No, I'm down there tomorrow night.
Remind me we can't finish tonight without letting people know where you're going to be.
All right. Okay.
Where are you feeling today?
Let's do See?
Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans and miss it each night and day? I know I'm not wrong, the feeling's getting stronger the longer I stay away. Miss that moss covered vines, the tall sugar pine, where mockingbirds used to sing. There's something more. You miss the one you can't follow. I said more than I miss New Orleans. I said moonlight.
Do you know what it missed?
Yeah, man.
That reminds me, too, the first tune that we played when we first came in on this podcast was what? What did we play? What was the name
of
the tune?
What did we play? Dee-dap, dee-dap.
In Walk Bud.
Yeah, In Walk Bud.
Bud Powell. I believe Bud Powell wrote that. Right?
No, that's Miles.
Or Monk.
Oh, Monk.
Thelonious Monk wrote that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Let me say Miles. Where did I get that from? Dee-dap, pop, dee-dap. That's a trumpet in me.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Well, wonderful. So let's fast forward now. So you, you're working in New Orleans with Porgy Jones and
with
others.
Porgy. And I mainly worked with Porgy's group.
Okay.
But after word got around that Porgy had this young singer, I was one of the young singers in town back then. And, of course, in my teens. And I started to get hired by other people. Mm-hmm. You know, Red Tyler had a band. I worked with Red Tyler. I worked with Ellis a little bit.
Ellis Marcellus.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Ellis and James Black.
Yeah,
back then. And learned a lot of, I got to say this first, too, before I get to that. I started really, really getting in, once I got with Porgy, Porgy had Edward Frank playing with him.
Yeah.
Edward Frank was very instrumental in me developing at that time.
How so?
Learning more material, more songs, shaping those songs a different way, not shaping them like what you hear on the record, you know. Yeah. Rearranging stuff, you know what I mean?
You know, that's an interesting point,
because
I had a singer, a young student in high school. Mm-hmm. She did a little performance for us recently, and extremely talented.
Mm-hmm.
But it struck me, and having worked with singers for a long time, it's students. There's a thing where the tendency is almost to, even if you listen to Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, all the greats, it's a tendency to kind of want to just cop what they do, everything down to the arrangement.
Yeah.
And to teach
and that's
someone
fine
how
starting
to,
out, don't you think?
Starting out, that's great.
Yeah.
But, yeah, how do you break that into being free and being creative like they were doing on those recordings?
Right.
You know,
learning the material,
right,
getting it down pat,
right,
okay,
right,
and understanding. I think that's where that little bit of understanding and listening and the chord structures
study.
And this and that study, yeah.
Yeah.
And it helped. That's really where I developed my style. Everybody say, "Oh, you sound like Lou Rawls," but I don't think I sound like Lou Rawls.
No, I don't think so.
I sound like Ed Perkins.
There you go. Well, that's what you want.
That's developed over a period of time.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What works for you? Yeah. You Joe Williams might have did it like this here, but you can do it like this here.
I've always liked the analogy of like a funnel.
Yeah,
and you take a little bit of, and you're
little bit of
Joe
that.
Williams,
little
bit of Lou Rawls,
little bit of Prasak,
all those influences,
all those
influences,
and like I said, I listen to the women a lot, Ella, Sarah Vaughan.
Yeah.
Oh man, I used to listen to Mel Torme a lot.
Oh, what a wonderful,
amazing
talent.
Woo,
yeah,
what he did with the voice,
the Velvet Fog.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, and Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, you know they. I guess because of the baritone voice, you listen a lot to a lot of people. But over the years, I learned to sing. I learned to hear what I wanted to hear from all the guys, the R&B guys, Al Green, some of the groups like the OJs. You know, you learn some of all that,
right?
Which opened up a whole new thing for me as a singer. I'm able to
sing with a lot of different people. And coming up in New Orleans at that time, you had to learn not just sing the standards. You know, you had to learn to sing some of all of that.
That's one thing I've always felt was great about New Orleans. For anyone coming up playing music in that city is, if you're really going to work that city, you have to know how to play a lot of different styles of music.
A lot of different styles. A lot of different genres there.
Yeah.
And I let me mention this, too, that I worked with Olive and the Rockettes. That was an R&B band. I did that on Monday nights with Olive and the Rockettes.
Okay.
In New Orleans at that time, you could work four or five nights a week, you know. And I did at that time. So had a lot of good toolage, man.
Well, so you made your way up to Baton Rouge, and talk to me about that, because I know you, both you and I had the luxury of spending time with Alvin Batiste, but tell me that story, how that evolved for you.
Well, you know, I'm a Vietnam vet.
Well, tell us about that.
You know, I worked in New Orleans all those years after high school, 1966. And was attending Southern. I started off at SUNO
in New Orleans. Yeah,
but they didn't have a jazz program there. But I was strictly going to school and stood out of, went to school a couple of semesters, stayed out a semester, got drafted.
Okay.
So that's how I wound up in the military.
Right.
My music, to me, the music thing was just really kicking off for me in New Orleans at that time. Because like I said, I was working with Ellis and Pogi and a whole bunch of different people.
Right.
In Kamalka Sam.
Right.
Off the training in Vietnam.
Gotcha.
You know? And I kept the music in my head. Matter of fact, interesting story I don't tell, but in boot camp, they would put on talent shows. I was at Fort Benning in Georgia. And man, I'd win trophies singing because I'd find me a piano player. Didn't play any piano, but I found a guy that could play good piano, and I'd get the talent show and win them. So that kind of kept the music in me, too, even though I'm in the military.
Right.
And I was infantry. Sent over to Vietnam. Say, okay, you're going to spend a year in Vietnam. I said, man, I'm in the infantry, the music, you know.
That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for tuning in. And if you want to hear this episode again, you can find it on our website, artsbr.org, and click on AC23. We'll see you next time.